The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show today. We have Sean Aguano, the interim head coach at Arizona State. I hope he's being given a shot. I really do. I think he's got to get to 5 or 6 wins, probably 6. And I think they've got a shot this week against Washington because they played well against USC. We'll get into that in a minute. Sean Aguano will be with us coming up at 10:20. Seth Joyner, the original. When I say original, Seth Joyner was the first ever NFL Network analyst when they first launched. And now Seth, the former Cardinal, is killing it, crushing it in Philadelphia. He does pre- and post-game shows around the Eagles. The Eagles are 4-0. The Eagles come here this coming Sunday. Are they a team that will be back here in February for the Super Bowl? We will visit with Seth Joyner on what is going on in Philly in the matchup with the Cardinals. And then John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, very popular segment we do every week. John is part of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com, his content, Wilner Hotline, deep dives. He had a great column on Amazon in the Pac-12. And a lot of controversy on that from fans' point of view. Some people just are never going to accept streaming. It's the way it goes. But John will be with us. We're going to talk to him about names around Arizona State. Kenny Dillingham's name is one that's been out there for a couple of weeks since Herm left. What happens at Colorado now? Colorado blew out their coach yesterday. Like, John probably doesn't have Sundays off because of all that. But we'll have John Wilner with us as well. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their ongoing support. We are in year number 12. 12 years of doing this online, where people are like, you're crazy. What is that? What do you mean you're going to go to a phone? No, that was 12 years ago. And here we are. We are thankful of all of our partners that say we believe in what you do. Our television show over on Bally Sports Arizona just signed a long-term contract with them to continue on with the Football AZ show and a couple of other projects as well. So we're happy with our partnership with Bally Sports Arizona. All right, Cardinals yesterday, God, they were awful. I mean, I don't know about you, but like the weather's nice and it's a pretty good day to go for a drive, to go for a hike, to go golf, to go fish, go do anything but to sit indoors and watch just anemic. And I mean anemic. That first half was a setback to a setback. It was just dreadful against Carolina. And I'm sitting there thinking they're going to be 1-3 and Philly's going to come to town at 4-0 and they're going to be 1-4. And you can't lose in the NFL. All you have to do is get to around 9. That's it. You get to around 9, there's going to be all sorts of scenarios, 9 wins. And so if you can get around 9 victories, if you can keep your head above water and not circle the drain, the first half was just like, oh my gosh, this is just dreadful dog food football. But what happened in the second half, and some of it was play calling by Cliff, like the people that are there every day that I talk to, we have on the show that say Cliff gets too cute and Cliff's play calling needs to be questioned. Yeah. You know, it's just a little fly sweep to Rondale Moore. What a brilliant call. No, it was a train wreck. And on and on. I'm just, guys get into the league and you look at it and say, are they really cut out to be head coaches in the NFL? So. But here they are now at 2-2, and Philadelphia comes this week. That is on my mind. On the college end, so Saturday I went to Tucson. It was fun. Went to Tucson to see U of A against Colorado. I like some of the things that are going on within the U of A football program, talking with some people there around it. I needed to go see, and I wanted to get down there early, walk around the stadium, visit with some Valley people that are in the business sector and some people in Tucson too, and just get a vibe. Get a vibe. It's pretty easy to watch games on TV. No, you need to go to the fire. You need to see what it's all about at times. And I have not been to Tucson so far this season. Yeah, it was Colorado. Yeah, it was Carl Durrell's last game. Colorado can't tackle. I mean, just can't tackle anything. Your daughter would be safe if it was a high school date. They're just like, I mean, what is going on here, guys? Please get after it. And they just look like a team that was about to blow out their coach. I felt bad for Josh McCown's son. Josh McCown's son was starting quarterback. I like Josh a lot. Josh, one of my favorite people I've covered in sports. And his son hung in there, but just not enough. So I stuck around there for about a half, had some dinner down there, visited with some people. Came back, listened to Tim Healy and Jeff Van Rapphorst in the first half, rolled the DVR here. It's why God made a DVR. Came back, watched the second half at USC, took it all in, thought about it, wrote about it, feel the same way. Sean's making progress. You can't make huge jumps because this is not his team. And so I'm going to have Sean Aguano on here in a few minutes, and it's about where he is, where he's trying to get to. You know, the ongoing lip service for the last, I don't know how long years of them not doing anything in regard to local recruiting. I got to talk to him about that. Does he really feel like he's going to get a fair shot from Dr. Crow and Ray Anderson on this deal? And just where has he been in 2 weeks? This is not going to be a heavy lifting interview. I just want to visit with him and see where he's at. You know, interim coaches are in a different space. But can you believe what's going on in college football? Today, Arizona State's open. Colorado's open. Colorado's not a good job. They're not committed to athletics. Coach Mel Tucker is going to stick there a year and say, I am gone. I am out of here. And that's what happened. Now they bring Carl Durrell back and they boot him out. Wisconsin's open. Georgia Tech's open. Nebraska's open. Like, there's some jobs you look at and say, is Arizona State a better job than Wisconsin? And the answer would be no. Is Arizona State a better job than Colorado? The answer emphatically is yes. Yes, it is. You want it to be where, oh my gosh, this is where you want it to be. Arizona State is open. That is the premier job in the country. Right now, Arizona State a better job than Nebraska? Arizona State a better job than Georgia Tech? I'd say probably yeah. So as these jobs come open and the fan base, you know, fan bases just want their guy and everything's great. And I look at it because I have no allegiance on any of this stuff and say, well, you know, what is your selling point? What is it you're able to do? And maybe the best guy is just right there in the house, in the seat right now. Maybe he is. Many people disagree with that. We want Deion Sanders. We want Urban Meyer. Don't even say that. You know, we want, you know, we need a name. And then we need a Sun Devil. We need a guy that's been a Sun Devil. No, you don't. It's like, well, he went to school here. That's what's going to get it turned around. No, it's not. It's a top to bottom deal. The Diamondbacks play Milwaukee to finish out the season. And they can knock Craig Council, who I like a lot. They can knock the Brewers right out of the postseason by just taking care of some business. Whatever happens, this has been a season of transition and a season of progress. The biggest issue for this franchise is their building. And is their owner going to talk about the building? And are they going to spend money in free agency when I don't really believe they need to? You don't have to go out and break the bank. There's a lot of young talent here. If you find the right piece here and the right piece there, but Aaron Judge isn't coming to Arizona unless it's on a 3-game trip with the Giants. I think that's where he's going to go, in my opinion. So there's that. You know, some people ask me about the J.J. Watt heart scare, and I would tie that in on Tua. Remember the movie Concussion? Remember how that was all built up? And then, I don't know if you remember, when Sony got hacked and some emails from Sony got out in the open, and it was Roger Goodell saying, you better tone this down, and so on and so on and so on and so on. I remember going to that junket. I sat with Will Smith and said, what about the big bad NFL? This was peeling the layers back. And he's like, well, they're not the big, bad NFL. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. You know, the Tua thing the other night, we're going to get rid of the doctor. We don't want this in the Sunday morning news cycle. We certainly don't want it to be talked about on Mondays. We want to move on. So here's J.J. Watt. Somehow it gets leaked out. Privacy issues, I got to believe. And he made plays yesterday, but, you know, he's talking about how his heart had to be... He was AFib. I'm not joking about it. It was just like the whole idea of stuff. When you watch your heroes on the gridiron on Sundays or Saturdays or even Fridays and don't think there's stuff going on off the field with them, he had to have his heart shocked. And he's playing yesterday, playing well. JJ played a great game yesterday. So that's in the news cycle as well. But up next, Sean Aguano, interim head coach at Arizona State University. We'll visit with Sean, then Seth Joyner, the original NFL Network analyst from Philly. Eagles coming to town, 4-0. Are they a Super Bowl team? And then John Wilner and Wilner Hotline. Busy Monday. Thanks for being with us. All right, as promised, Sean Aguano with us, interim head coach at Arizona State University. They play Washington this Saturday afternoon. Lots of tickets available. Head on out, check out the Sun Devils and what Coach Aguano is trying to get turned around here. To that end, two games in, if I would have told you 14, 15 days ago, you'd be sitting in that chair as the interim head coach, would you have believed me, like, I don't know, anytime, Sean?
Absolutely not. You know, it was a surprise to me that morning. When Ray asked me to be the interim head coach, but 15 days ago, no idea at all.
How's it been? I mean, just big general softball, throw it up there for you to whack out of the park. How's this gig been for you?
I've enjoyed it. You know, that first week on that honeymoon week, that cultural change for everyone was rough for everyone. As you see, it played out against USC. The kids are understanding what I want from them and their passion for the game. That I thought was evident this past weekend.
Have you felt as though the team has come to you? There's got to be that point of that coach is in here. This is my guy. I want to embrace him. It looks like on the surface that's happening. I'm not there. I'm not in that locker room, but it looks like the team is responding to you.
They are. It has been, and I've told them thank you. And from our coaching staff and us, because they are listening. They've embraced the coaching change and they know what they need to do for that first win.
Have you had to bring the hammer down, Sean? Have you had to change some things?
Absolutely. You know, from an accountability standpoint, my expectations are my minimum standards and they understand that, I don't play that game, in regards to letting anything go by, especially the details, and building that foundation. So, it was a little change for them. But they have embraced it.
Is it difficult to do in season?
Absolutely. You know, especially three games in, and now you're asking them in 4 days to change that culture. And it's from a coaching staff and all our support staff and them buying in. These 2 weeks has been tough. However, everybody has bought in and we got everybody on the same page.
How is it for you to be in that chair and have to have people, your assistant coaches, say, we got to get this fixed. We got to work on that. I know you can lead and delegate, but it's got to come back to you too. If a staff is going to work, coaches got to be wide open to that. You haven't been in this position since high school. It's a big jump, in my opinion, to college. Coaching is not just coaching, or is it, Sean?
I feel it is. It's, you know, it's the relationship, their understanding of my vision and what I want done from my minimum standards. They understand that I'll be relentless in regards to the details and what I want from the program to look like. And they have bought in. I'm very open to suggestions. I hear suggestions every single day. But at the same time, I'm the guy that's making the last decision and they understand that. I'm fair with them. I hear them. And so they are part of this turnaround and this program as well.
For being specific, Emory Jones, so far this in 2 weeks, what have you seen? What have you liked? What does he need to improve upon?
You know, his maturation, I thought, in these 2 weeks, understanding what I'm looking for him. He doesn't need to go out and make the big play, let it come to him. Mm-hmm. He understands that he has my full confidence. I thought he did a great job last week managing the football game and taking things that needed to be taken instead of trying to make things happen on his part. And so he's understanding and feeling comfortable with me, feeling comfortable with the guys that are around him after 5 games. And he's growing and growing each day.
What do you like most about your offense? What needs to get cleaned up week to week going to Washington this Saturday?
You know, I think the deliberation on details, to be deliberate in everything that we do. I especially the tempo of the game. I wanted to up the tempo of the game, understand that we need to run the football and making sure that we impose our will from a interior standpoint. And I thought we did that against USC. Now we need to make sure that we get better on third down conversions. We're at 58%, and that was a lot better last week. But there is more improvement that needs to be done, especially when we are coming out of the halftime in the third quarter with the ability to take the lead. We need to make sure that we take the opportunity and run with it.
It will be Arizona State and Washington this Saturday at 1 o'clock. Tickets available at the stadium. You can check out Sean Aguano and company as they get ready to take on the Huskies. Flip it around, defensive side of the football, you have a huge challenge. Every week's a huge challenge, obviously, but you have a quarterback up there that's getting a lot of attention. What do you need to see improvement from USC to Washington on the field Saturday?
Our guys doing their job. You know, I thought that we had a lot of dirty eyes, and those dirty eyes were because of the quarterback extending plays and then our eyes getting off of our guys. And then you see them wide open, going back to the fundamentals and doing their job right, making sure that from a containment standpoint, we contain the quarterback. I thought that quarterback that we played was pretty good last week, and he extended plays. We got to make sure that we take our job seriously on the inside, and making sure those interior guys have containment and then don't get beat by the big plays. And so those are the emphasis that we're looking for this week.
Sean, a couple of questions to you on before I get you out of here. And that is, as an interim, obviously you want to be the head coach. How can you process and work through that? Do you just have to keep your head down and say, we've got to hammer the rock? Are you in that space right now where it's early October? Or can you have conversation with Ray Anderson and Dr. Crow? How does that process work? That's probably the biggest question I get from fans.
Absolutely. You know, the process, I understand. It's the changing of the culture, the discipline from our program, our kids playing with passion, and then ultimately winning football games. And I understand that has to be done. And I'm going about that process and keeping my head down and wishing for the best. But right now, it's a time to take care of our kids, make sure they play passionate, disciplined football. And if that happens, the outcome will be winning games. And that outcome will hopefully lead to that interim tag taking off. But right now, I'm here for the kids and our coaches and making sure that we take care of our jobs.
When you're not on the football field or in the football office, do you have people you can go to and just vent?
Yeah, my wife, but she's really hard on me. You know, she's the one that says, you better just suck it up. So sometimes I don't go to her because I know what the answer I'm going to get. But, you know, there's a bunch of friends that I've made throughout my career that are around town, a bunch of people that and alumni that I have ears as well. And, you know, their encouragement. But I don't need really much of that encouragement. I know what the job needs to be done. I'm a pretty positive guy in everything that I do. So it's my job to make sure that our kids are taken care of and we get this job done.
You can't speak specifically about recruiting in terms of players, but you can talk about, are you hearing around town, around the state, of players that potentially may want to give an eyebrow towards Arizona State that haven't in the past?
Absolutely. And I'm going to be relentless, Brad, in regards to recruiting these Arizona players personally. You know, in the past, I thought position coaches and coordinators, they understand that I'm going to do it personally. The relationships with the coaches, I have those coaches. And I understand that some of the big time names in the 2023 class have the commitments. Now it's my job until that paper is signed to make sure that they have a eyes on our program and see that there is change and have that ability. And I won't stop till that pen goes to paper, but Arizona State should definitely be a place that they should come and play for, because the culture will change and we will win. And we want to make sure it is done with Arizona athletes.
So you're trying to flip players. For fans that may not understand the language of recruiting, there may be players that have committed to 2023, but it's legal to walk in there and say, at least give us a look. Come stand on the sideline at a game. Whether it's a 23 kid or a 24 kid at the highest caliber, you're going after those guys in state.
Absolutely. You know, inviting them to practices, inviting them to our games, seeing what our coaches are about, especially what I'm about, my vision, and having those conversations with parents while they're on campus. But I want to make sure that they understand that they're important to our program and to our state, and I'm going to do it personally.
One last question on that. Are you finding it that you're being embraced by the high school coaches? Because, and I'll just say it quite frankly, they have felt completely distanced from ASU. You can only be so many places in the past. Are you feeling embraced?
Absolutely. And any time that I get to get out to a game, I will get out there. I will be around our Arizona coaches. For them, for me, it has been a dream. For them, it's an opportunity to look forward to something that they might be a part of. And so I want to make sure that they are embracing Arizona State and they're part of keeping our kids home. And so they feel, we always talk about the family, the Ohana, they feel a part of that in our state as well.
Good to see you. Good to hear you. Best of luck Saturday against Washington. Appreciate the time, Sean. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Brad. Thank you.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, it's great to see the original NFL network analyst. I like to refer to Seth Joyner as the original. Former Arizona Cardinal, now does so much around the Eagles in Philadelphia. They are undefeated at 4-0. They come into the Valley on Sunday. Seth Joyner with us for a few minutes. I'm going to throw you a softball right off the top. Why, how, 4-0? Are you surprised by the Eagles, Seth?
You know, I think we're surprised, but not surprised. I think, you know, Howie Roseman, the GM here in Philadelphia, has done a fantastic job of, you know, building this roster, improving the talent level on this football team. And I think we're watching a quarterback, you know, who's drafted, you know, 53rd overall in the second round, really grow into his own right now. And, you know, all the pieces have fallen into place. You know, they're winning games that they're supposed to win. You know, they're gelling as a complete team at this point in time.
Yeah, they had adversity on Sunday. They were down 14-0, probably the first time they've had some adversity this year. But you have a head coach in place. There was no panic.
Well, listen, they need to experience all the things that, you know, a season entails. You know, the first week, you know, they came out, they blitzed the heck out of the quarterback. You know, he survived that. You know, they came back the following week, played a very vanilla Minnesota defense. You know, he sat in the pocket and threw for over 350 yards and, you know, three touchdowns. And then last week, you know, they got behind the eight ball, down 14, you know, and came back and won the game, you know, there. So they're having to experience everything along the way. I think the coach, you know, has the ear of the locker room. The players believe in him. You know, and when the older players start chirping the, you know, football isms, you know, of their 24-year-old third-year quarterback, you know, then you know that your leader is leading in the proper way.
Are you surprised by Jalen Hurts and how effective he's become, Seth?
No, you know, Brad, I'm really not, because I think if you look at his history, you know, this is the first year he's had a system and an offensive coordinator that he's been able to, you know, get into year two in since, you know, he's been in high school. You look at his trajectory at Alabama, rather, starting there. He takes the team, wins the national championship, then, you know, loses out to Tua, doesn't leave, stays there. And then and because he stays, you know, he rescues, you know, the you know, Alabama's chances in the playoffs, because Tua gets hurt. He goes in, wins the SEC championship game. Right. And then the following year, knows that he's not going to be the guy and decides to move on to Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley does a phenomenal job with him for a quarterback that, you know, that was had the tag hung on him that he could not throw the ball. He threw for over 3,800 yards, you know, 30-plus touchdowns, ran for another 1,200 with another 20 rushing touchdowns, and, you know, then gets drafted to Philadelphia in the quagmire of Carson Wentz and all that went on there. So I think the things that he's been through, what he's had to traverse and overcome, I think he's a good fit, you know, for Philadelphia.
Seth Joyner with us, the original NFL Network analyst in Philadelphia, doing lots of work around the Eagles, a former Cardinal with us as well. Cardinals-Eagles this Sunday. Flip it around on the defense. From afar, Hassan Reddick has found his space. Let's just start with him and how productive he's been in Philly.
Well, you know, I wondered how they were going to utilize him. I mean, he's a unique piece. You know, they like to run a lot of five man, and they kind of interchange him between the fifth guy that kind of drops. He can do that. You know, he's not very, very skilled at doing it, but he can do it better than the pieces that they had last year. So he's an upgrade. We know he can rush the passer. You know, that's really his forte. So in obvious passing situations, they can drop and put his hand down on the ground. And he can get to the quarterback. But I think that they're experimenting and finding out various ways to use him and his skill set. And he's been a great piece to add to this defense.
Yeah, Bradbury coming over as a free agent's made an impact. I remember talking with you a couple of years ago. You were critical. I mean, just crushing Philadelphia for their mm-hmm. player personnel decisions. It sounds like they've got that figured out and they've got things really going. This is not a mirage at 4-0.
Well, it begins with the draft because, you know, contrary to what, you know, the Rams are up to and what they've done. You know, most teams still believe that you build your team long term, you know, via the draft. And, you know, Howie Roseman has finally got it right the last couple of years with Devontae Smith last year and Jordan Davis, you know, this year. You pick the best available players and the players that fit, you know, what it is that you do. You can't go willy-nilly and run off, you know, with this guy that you think prospectively can be, you know, a fit. You go with the guys that are proven and that are slotted. So that's the first thing. He's gotten the draft right. And then, you know, via free agency, he's been able to make some moves that really, you know, change the trajectory of this defense, in particular the defense. And A.J. Brown is a big piece on draft day that they moved for because they had the extra, you know, had three first-round draft picks. So that was huge. But on the defensive side, you know, the signing of Kazir White at linebacker gave them depth and created competition there. You finally got, you know, another cornerback, a starting style quarterback, and James Bradbury, you know, to pair with Darius Slay. And then, you know, the late trade C.J. Gardner-Johnson from the New Orleans Saints that can play, you know, slot corner. He can play safety. He can play in a myriad of places. He's really a utility guy that's given them some depth on the back end. And then obviously, you know, the signing of Hassan Reddick and the depth that they created through the draft and getting Brandon Graham back this year from a torn Achilles is really just, you know, improved his defense, and they're playing lights out right now.
Before I get you out of here, on the defensive side, what do you expect Sunday to be like, Eagle defense v. Cardinal offense, Seth?
Well, for me, Brad, I'm still a big believer in pressure. I think pressure changes things, you know, from a quarterback's perspective. You know, they played Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Kirk Cousins, and Trevor Lawrence in the first four games. To me, those are four quarterbacks, you know, for whatever reason it is, they don't handle pressure really well, and they're all not very mobile quarterbacks. Kyler Murray is a different animal. And I think that, you know, they need to take that in consideration as they game plan, because he can do more damage when he gets out of the pocket than making him operate from the pocket. So you got to be controlled in how you go after him. But pressure will still always be, you know, the deciding factor in these football games. Can you pressure him enough to make him make bad throws and make him make bad decisions, while at the same time being able to contain him and keep him within the structure of the pocket? If they can do that, then I give them a good chance to win this game. If he starts running around and, you know, and creating magic, you know, he can make things really difficult. You know, even when you think you have a lead and you think the game is safe, you know, he's a playmaker and he can make some things happen.
Good to see you. Glad things are going well, Seth. Thanks for the time.
Anytime, Brad. Thank you, man.
And we're back with more after this timeout. As promised, it is time, our weekly get together with one and only John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Follow his content on social media. Follow the Wilner Canzano podcast. Of course, his content is on sports360az.com. You look rested, refreshed, relaxed, because nothing happened over the weekend. There wasn't a spot of news. In all seriousness, Colorado firing Carl Durrell. We're not surprised by this in any way, shape, or form, right?
No, we are not. Herm Edwards entered the season as number one on the hot seat list in the Pac-12. And once he was dismissed or relinquished his duties, however you want to phrase it, Carl Durrell moved to number one on that list. And now he's gone. And it's a little bit interesting who's next on the list. But that is five in-season coaching firings in the Pac-12 since the start of the 2021 season. It's just crazy.
Well, and John, if we just look across the landscape of the jobs that have come open, and we're not even in mid-October yet, you know, yep, whether it's Georgia Tech or Nebraska, you know, right down the list within the Pac-12 and others, this has become a deal now that coaches are not going to be feeling secure. Athletic directors want to win the press conference. There's someone sitting out there that is everybody's hot candidate. So let's get into the Colorado spot, and we'll go through some names in a second. But fans ask, and they've asked me, why can't they win at Colorado? And my thing is, they don't have the facilities. This is not the day of Rashawn Salaam or Westbrook. Those days are long gone. There's not a commitment to football.
at Colorado. When you lose Brendan Rice and see him running up and down the sidelines against US for USC, that's just one player, but there's a lot of them. What is your view of why Colorado can't get it done in the pack?
Well, it's interesting. I think that they have got some broader issues, right? I mean, certainly the resources and the amount of money and the commitment to football on the part of their chancellor and the administration, certainly the chancellor, makes it tough, right? They are, in terms of getting kids in through the transfer portal, they are a lot more like Stanford than you might expect. And I think that's hurt them. But more broadly, you know, there's not a whole lot of in-state talent in Colorado, right? And there's certainly not a whole lot of in-state speed. You know, the best prospects often are offensive linemen. They rely heavily on the Dallas Metroplex and on Los Angeles for their recruiting. And it's hard when your main recruiting grounds are two-hour flights away, right? They don't have nearly as much in-state talent as Utah or Arizona. Now, those are two contrasting situations, right? Because Arizona's got a lot of in-state talent and the Arizona schools have a hard time getting it. Utah's got a lot of in-state talent and the Utes do get it. And that's one of the reasons for their success. Colorado is the opposite. They don't have much. And so you've got to have a coach who's going to be able to sell the program to the fans, but also sell that program to recruits in Texas and recruits in California.
Who makes sense on that front? You know, some names that, like, Eric Bieniemy's name is going to be thrown in there because he's a former Buff. He's been passed over in the NFL. Doesn't mean he can recruit. Doesn't mean he can be the right head coach. Maybe he is. Who's some names to you that make sense of that job, John?
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, one name that is very intriguing came available yesterday. Another coaching firing, right? Wisconsin fired Paul Chryst. Paul Chryst has been one of the best coaches in the country for a decade. That things haven't gone great in Madison in the last year or two. That surprised some people. If I'm Colorado, even though, you know, Paul Chryst doesn't have, you know, he's not the young, energetic kind of guy. He is an incredible coach who has won and repeatedly at Wisconsin. And his style of play would make sense in a lot of ways for Colorado in terms of, you know, a lineman-based recruiting scheme and a run-based offense, right? So I would certainly take a look at him. You know, it'll be interesting to see. Are they going to go, you know, Coastal Carolina, you know, Appalachian State, right? A lot of the Sun Belt schools that have had tons of success, would they think about hiring those coaches? Would they go to a Pac-12 coordinator who's hot, like Ryan Grubbs, a Washington offensive coordinator, right? A lot of options, and they have time. They got 2 months. Like ASU, they got 2 months to figure out a strategy and to identify their candidates.
Okay. The Arizona State job, Kenny Dillingham's name is all over down here. He's the offensive coordinator at Oregon. Oregon just boat raced Stanford the other night. What do you make out of Kenny Dillingham, John?
Well, I think that there is a lot of reason to think that that's the kind of either Dillingham specifically or that model, young and energetic with a lot of college, you know, who's from the college ranks and understands the recruiting system, the way recruiting is set up right now. You know, they need somebody who gets it at the college level and is very hands on. Right. They got to go the opposite of the Herm Edwards model in every respect, basically, I think. Dillingham, we'll see how Oregon does with their offense. He does certainly has never been a head coach, doesn't have a ton of experience as a coordinator. What, he's like 32, maybe 33. So I think he's one of the few candidates who may be willing to take the job regardless of the NCAA situation because he has such strong ties to ASU and Phoenix. And that's a piece that we have to remember, right? Nobody knows if they're going to hear from the NCAA before they make this hire. And that could affect their candidate pool if a lot of top guys are wary because they're looking at multiple years of probation with scholarship reductions and bowl bans. So we'll see. But Dillingham may take the job regardless.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline. This past week, it flew under the radar. I saw it from Ralph Russo. The Air Force penalties of having students on campus for football with Troy Calhoun. And it made it sound as though that there's going to be a push to get these cases settled. And the penalties really weren't that severe, in my opinion, John. Did you see that story? Did you make anything out of it? Am I just looking at it incorrectly? What'd you make out of that story?
No, I think that there's definitely some truth to that. And if you're an ASU fan, you probably saw that story and came out of it a little bit encouraged. And I think if you're ASU, the fact that Herm Edwards is no longer there, right, whether he was fired or relinquished his duties, whether it was because of on-field performance or really because of the NCAA situation, the fact that Edwards is gone, Antonio Pierce is gone, I think is going to help ASU avoid the, you know, the hammer of Thor, just like I think Sean Miller being gone is going to help Arizona, right? Mm-hmm. So, but certainly, if you look at the LSU situation, however, you could draw a different conclusion in terms of how the NCAA viewed what LSU did during COVID. I mean, the wording in the statement about the LSU was pretty strong. So we'll see where it comes out. But the sooner ASU finds out, regardless of what the outcome is, the sooner ASU finds out, the better.
Yeah, because I think if ASU had just done the right thing 15 months ago and let everybody go, and I look at the Air Force ruling, I could say, well, they knew, they're trying to clean this thing up, they're moving on. Instead, they had this defiant attitude, arrogance, in my opinion, around them, saying, yes, there's no fire here. You guys, you know, we're Arizona State. We have it all figured out. And so because they didn't act, the NCAA could say, well, you guys, you were going to bring the hammer of, as you aptly put it, the hammer of Thor down on them. So I think it could go either way. But I thought that story this past week was one that college football fans should keep an eye on. Yep. Let's bounce around just some games. I was in Tucson the other night. It's some people in the press box that said, did you get lost? Why'd you end up at Colorado against Arizona? I just wanted to get a feel off the field and around some people with the program about where they are. John, there is a level of optimism for them. If they hadn't crapped the bed against Cal, they'd be sitting there at 4-1, but they did. They have Oregon this week. Most people would say no shot. I love the Wildcat wide open offense. They can score, man. They can get up and down the field. It is football and roller skates. It's Arena Football League style stuff. But is this the reality check for the rest of their season? You can make a case. There's not another win for them until they take on ASU. Schedule gets really hard. Arizona, Oregon, going to be a good game, not a good game.
I think it'll be a good game for, let's say, three quarters. Okay. I agree with you. I think they're fun to watch. Certainly, it's very appealing for recruits and for fans. The receivers are very, very good. And Jaden Delora, guy can make plays, but the guy can also make mistakes. And so what's going to be interesting is, how does Arizona protect Delora and how does he respond to pressure? Because if he forces passes in the coverage, he's going to end up throwing three or four picks in this game, and then they got no chance to win. Oregon's front seven is very good, and they are going to put heat on him. I'm still not sold on Arizona's lines of scrimmage in terms of being good enough for them to, you know, win seven or eight games. I don't necessarily know that they're quite at that level. Yep. So I could see a game where Arizona makes some big plays and also some big mistakes, and Oregon punishes them for that, and it ends up being, you know, it's Oregon's up by 7 or 10 points entering the fourth quarter and ends up winning by 17 or 20.
Yeah, yeah. And when you look at Cowling and Singer, really good pair of receivers.
Really good.
Can't run the football very well. That speaks to the line of scrimmage. But broader than that, Jed's come in and has used the transfer portal. This can go to Colorado and go to Arizona State. They're both decimated by the portal. Jed's come in, and the portal for him, it's as though you've got to be able to go get 5-10 guys out of the portal every year now. And he's done that. Without the transfers, they're not good. They're awful again.
Yeah. Oh, he's done a great job. He's on the list of coaches who have really used the portal to their advantage the last few years. Obviously, Lincoln Riley's probably at the top of the list, you know, but he's got inherent advantages with SC, right? But yeah, the portal has helped Arizona recover. That's the thing, is you can climb out of an 0-5 season in COVID and a 1-11 season after COVID very quickly, right? If there's no portal, then Jed Fish's rebuilding is, you know, this is all extended by 2 or 3 years. But the portal, you know, is like a time travel, lets you go into the future much more quickly. And he's done a great job. I think it has certainly helped him that ASU has not been a destination for a lot of kids, right, who are looking for places to go. And it's so happy, you know, UC, if you're thinking about the recruits, like Southern California, Arizona recruits, right? UCLA is, you know, they take portal kids also, but it's a little bit different pool of player than what Arizona's looking at. And Fish has done a great job.
UCLA, Utah, litmus test, reality, what happens with the Bruins?
Yeah, I mean, certainly litmus test, right? This will be their toughest game by far. Utah has pounded them for years in a row. I think UCLA is better equipped than it has been to actually give Utah a good game. And it should be a good game, right? But it's a different level of play at the line of scrimmage when you're going up against Utah. They are not going to be, you know, I don't know to what extent there is a crowd in the Rose Bowl. Utah is not going to be, it's not going to affect them. They're going to make UCLA have to work for everything, whereas Washington did not. So I think it could be the, it's certainly the highest profile game now that both teams are ranked. It's going to be on Fox broadcast at 4 o'clock Eastern. So it's a nice window for the Pac-12. And it should be the best game of the weekend, at least in terms of the matchups.
How many points are Washington State and USC going to put up?
That's a good question because you got Washington State's defense is really good. Their front seven is one of the best in the conference. They are 25th in scoring defense in the country, whereas SC is like 10th in scoring offense. So it's a little bit of a contrast. Washington State's offense hasn't been very good. And I'd argue that USC's defense has been opportunistic rather than stout, right? Because you can get yards on them, but they've created a lot of turnovers to their credit. I think that's going to be the big key here. If Washington State doesn't turn the ball over, it is going to be a close game because Washington State's defense is legit. If the Cougars do make a few mistakes, then they're going to get they're going to pay for it because you can't give SC extra chances and you can't give them short fields. They can score in a heartbeat.
I like some of the things that Sean Aguano did on an interim basis the other night at USC. He has Washington this week. It's going to be a day game. It's going to be a sparse crowd. The Huskies have to travel back down here after going from UCLA back up, coming back down here. What did you make out of Washington, and do you think that this could be a big game? When Aguano took over, everybody said he's going to lose all three. Do you still believe that?
I think that there's a better chance than not that Arizona State loses again, right? But certainly you like what you've seen from them last week at SC. They played, you know, they played hard. They moved the ball. It's amazing what like hands-on coaching can do, right? I mean, it's like the opposite. Again, you have the NFL model with the CEO model with the hands-off head coach, and now Aguano's on them, right? And their practices are different. And that may have a real impact this week. Washington can move the ball. They have got one of the best quarterbacks in the country, very good receivers. They are going to move the ball. Their defense is a little suspect, so there's going to be opportunities for ASU. I think a lot of it's going to depend on Emory Jones. If he's smart with the ball, ASU's got a real chance to make this a close game.
Appreciate your time, and as always, John, stay safe. Have a good week.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, and we're back with more after this timeout.